This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
To me, President Nasheed is really a human rights hero for the 21st century, and he needs all the help and support that he can get.
In the remote Indian Ocean nation of the Maldives, they don't have the luxury of discussing climate change as an academic subject. The small country's very existence faces a nearly inescapable fate of submersion. As president of the Maldives, Mohammed Nasheed was embraced by the international environmental community when he sent out a clarion call for immediate action to harness greenhouse gases at the Copenhagen Climate Change Conference of 2009. He was also featured in the documentary film The Island President, which chronicled his inspiring efforts. And yet, Mohammed Nasheed now faces a different sort of struggle. He was overthrown by a military dictatorship in 2013 and was incarcerated earlier this year. This week on Sea Change Radio, we discuss the plight of this imprisoned climate hero with his attorney, international human rights lawyer Jared Genzer. Genzer recently visited President Nasheed, along with fellow human rights activist Amal Clooney, who's also known as the wife of movie star George Clooney. I talk with Genzer about the current political situation in the Maldives and what his team is doing to help free not only President Nasheed, but also the 1,700 other political prisoners locked up by the dictatorship of Abdullah Yameen. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jared Genzer. He's a founder of Freedom Now, and he is a representative of President Mohammed Nasheed, former president of the Maldives. Jared, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Why don't you first tell us about Freedom Now, this non-governmental organization that you helped found?
Yes. So Freedom Now is a nonprofit non-governmental organization that works to free prisoners of conscience around the world. We actually represent them as clients and combine legal, political, and public relations advocacy to work on their behalf. So this is an organization I started based on out of an experience I had as a law student, actually helping to get a British guy out of a prison in Burma. And since we founded the organization in 2001, we've gotten more than 40 people out of jail around the world and have about 30, 35 active cases. I spent 5 years as Aung San Suu Kyi's international lawyer. During the latter year, she was under house arrest in Burma, and then actually have been having the real challenge of representing the 2010 Nobel Peace Prize laureate Liu Xiaobo of China and his wife Liu Xia, who we began representing a few months actually before he won the Nobel Peace Prize.
And most recently, somebody who could easily be on the short list for a Nobel Peace Prize is President Mohammed Nasheed of the Maldives. Why don't you first give us our listeners a little bit of a background on President Nasheed?
So Mohammed Nasheed was a journalist in the Maldives who worked to expose the excesses of the Mamoun Gayoom dictatorship over about a 20 or 30 year period. And he went to prison, spent about 4 years over 20 in prison, terribly tortured. When he got out of prison in 2005, after serving several years, he founded the Maldivian Democratic Party, and in 2008 became the first democratically elected president of the country. He was pushed out in a military coup in 2012, unfortunately, and the past dictatorship of Gayoom returned in a slightly different form. Gayoom's half-brother, Abdullah Yameen, became the president of the country, and the prior dictator's daughter, Gayoom's daughter, Dunia Mamoun, became the foreign minister. And this has been who has been in charge of the country since 2012. And what has happened in his particular situation is that in February of 2015, President Yameen had executed a crackdown on his own political party and his own cabinet. He actually imprisoned his former defense minister, his now former defense minister, and gave him a lengthy prison term, went after one of his allies in the parliament who he thought had turned against him. And another key ally who had won 24% of the vote, the votes in the 2013 presidential elections, left the government coalition and joined Nasheed's party. And Nasheed had had 47% of the vote in the first round of that election. And when that happened, he felt that there was a huge threat posed to him by President Nasheed. And on trumped up charges over a period of 17 days in March of 2015, President Nasheed was convicted and sentenced to 13 years in prison on terrorism charges. And that is where things stand currently today.
Now, before we dive in head first into the politics of it, and I'd like to hear more of your firsthand account of your visit to meet with the president, with Amal Clooney, why don't you explain why the Maldives in particular is relevant to a discussion about climate change and why President Nasheed has been such an important figure in the global fight against rising sea levels.
Sure. So President Nasheed is the first democratically elected president of Maldives, was educated in the United Kingdom, and is a small D Democrat and pro-democracy oriented. He's a moderate Muslim. The country is a Muslim country. Upon being elected to office and in looking at rising sea levels, he immediately realized that rising sea levels were a direct threat to the actual existence of his entire country. In fact, if sea levels continue to rise at the rates that are predicted, probably in about 60 or 70 years, roughly at this point, the Maldives will be underwater, the entire country, and everybody will have to have been removed and evacuated somewhere else. This is because the Maldives, on average, is about 2 feet above sea level, sea levels are expected to rise by 2 feet in the next 60 or 70 years. So in 2009, with the Copenhagen summit approaching, he took a leading role within the group of small island nations on the climate change issue, and ended up playing really a leading role in trying to rescue what was really going to be a train wreck in Copenhagen, where not even a joint statement could be issued. And ultimately, while not much was achieved in Copenhagen, what little was achieved was really credited in a large part to the emphatic role that that President Nasheed played, working around the clock with all various delegations from around the world to press for a statement of concern and pressing for action as well. While he was president, he also put in place a number of other pretty extraordinary policies and commitments. He said that within 10 years, the Maldives would aim to become the first carbon neutral country. This was a commitment that he made in 2008. Subsequently, he also put in place a range of protected ocean space within the Maldives and made a number of other commitments. He, of course, is best known internationally for having had this underwater cabinet meeting where he talked about, sustainable development and rising sea levels and used that as an opportunity to make a number of commitments to ensure that the oceans remain clean and accessible. So he was a real leader in the climate change movement globally, and therefore his being pushed out of office in a coup in 2012 was not only a loss for his people, but also a loss for the global climate change movement. And he remained active on those issues after he was pushed out of office, really until he was imprisoned in February of this year. Unfortunately, although President Nasheed remained active on climate change issues after the coup, the second coming of the Maumoon Gayoom dictatorship that has been in charge, President Yaman and his half-brother's family, have really reversed all of the commitments made by President Nasheed, including reversing some of the protected ocean spaces that had been set aside backing off the commitment to make the country carbon neutral in 10 years. And indeed, they are looking at partnering with China and CNOOC and others to explore for oil in the Maldives. And the Maldives is a very interesting place because there are, it covers an incredibly small surface area, but over the size of the state of California. And therefore, there's lots of ocean to look at if one were to want to go exploring for oil, natural gas, or other natural resources.
What kind of international reaction was there from allied countries when President Nasheed was thrown out of office and imprisoned? Has there been any governmental action, or is it up to activists and international rights lawyers like yourselves to figure out a strategy?
Well, the government, the government that pushed President Nasheed out actually did so pretty wisely at the time, although they're a dictatorship and generally not all that efficient overall. You know, they forced him to resign at gunpoint and at threat to his family's life, his wife and kids' lives. And then frog marched him to a press conference where he was forced to put forward a compelling argument as to that, you know, he was voluntarily resigning. And then, you know, held him for about 24 hours. And as a result, most of the international community believed that, in fact, he had actually voluntarily resigned, because most governments don't actually have embassies in the Maldives. They typically conduct their representations from Sri Lanka. So most governments, including the United States, the UK, and others, had, you know, accepted as a reality his resignation, recognized the new government under the sitting vice president. And by the time he said this was a coup, most governments said, well, that's too bad that you say that now, but it's too late. The international community, frankly, didn't do, in my view, what it should have done in 2012 with respect to President Nasheed. I mean, he was forced out of office at gunpoint, and yet the international community didn't come back around to support him. But be that as it may, as things started to deteriorate rapidly in January and February of this year, in terms of Yaman cracking down on his own cabinet, as well as on President Nasheed and leaders of other political parties, opposition political parties in the country, the international community has actually been very outspoken and critical of the government. We've had, President Nasheed's wife, Laila Ali, we've met Prime Minister David Cameron of the UK, we've met Secretary of State John Kerry, both of whom have called for Nasheed's immediate release. The European Parliament has done the same. Amnesty International describes his trial and conviction as a travesty of justice. And we've had numerous governments, intergovernmental institutions, and civil society groups, the International Commission of Jurists, Human Rights Watch, you know, all talking about the injustice of his detention, and also focusing on the broader set of issues of some 1,700 people facing charges in the Maldives for their nonviolent activism, standing up to the increasingly repressive government of President Yaman.
Yeah, so I wanted to get to that other 1,700, because part of your visit with Amal Clooney caused some rancor within the international rights community when Tony Blair's wife, Cherie Blair, who is a lawyer as well, disagreed with your strategy of trying to call for sanctions. And your defense was that you're not just trying to call on sanctions because of the imprisonment of one person. This is much larger than just President Nasheed. Is that an accurate portrayal of the situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty fair portrayal. What I would say is that Cherie Blair, is a hired gun of the government, being paid a whole lot of money, and she's taken the side of the government of the Maldives, and so she's their hired gun.
Wow, that's stunning.
Yes, it is pretty extraordinary. But unfortunately, if one looks a little bit into their background, what you'll see is that, Tony Blair has taken £20 million from the government of Kazakhstan to defend their dictatorship. And Cherie Blair represents, a number of other dictators in Africa. So sadly, this is not atypical for the kind of representation that she takes up. So ironically, she was trained as a human rights lawyer, but now she's assisting governments, in my view, in facilitating human rights abuses and trying to defend them. So one has to keep that in mind. So the people of the Maldives have called on the government to explain how much she's being paid to do this work. And of course, that hasn't been made public. And it's a great thing for people to be asking her, I think. But we're working all pro bono. Myself, Amal Clooney, Ben Emerson QC, who's a prominent British barrister as well. We're all working for free because we believe in the cause. And she's being paid to represent the government. So what we've said is that, it is not just calling for sanctions because of individual and targeted sanctions on human rights abusers, just to be clear, not economic sanctions more broadly. But we're talking about those targeted sanctions to respond to the broader lack of an independent and impartial judiciary and the 1,700 plus people facing charges on many different grounds, and torture that takes place with the police with impunity, with no cases resulting in prosecutions or convictions. And it's these broader sets of issues and concerns that have led us to make this call for targeted sanctions. And, you know, her response was to say on behalf of the government that, you know, that that's inappropriate, that this is just about Nasheed. You know, what I would also say, though, is that it's important to, I think, bear in mind that, you know, he is one man, but he's one man whose detention represents a broader set of abuses in the country, as I'm describing, in the same way that when I represented Aung San Suu Kyi of Burma, you know, there were thousands of other political prisoners also imprisoned, and talking about her case enabled you to point to those other political prisoners. And in the same way that, you know, Vaclav Havel, who I represented pro bono many years after he got out of prison, but on human rights matters, Vaclav Havel, you know, was a renowned dissident who became president of his country, you know, under when the Soviet Union controlled the former Czechoslovakia. So, I mean, I think talking about the kinds of high-profile cases like President Nasheed's case is a way to, you know, to put a human face on the broader repression taking place in a society, and it's eminently appropriate. And indeed, there are countless examples of the UK, the US, the EU, many other governments around the world putting in place targeted sanctions on individual human rights abusers in response to broad abuses.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time to stop and say, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop, hey, what's that sound? Tell me what's going round. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking in minds, oh, getting so much resistance from behind. I think it's time to stop. Hey, what's that sound? Hey, what's that sound?
Everybody look, yeah. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to international human rights attorney Jared Genzer. So Jared, give us a glimpse into how you and your colleagues managed to visit President Nasheed in prison. I'm sure the logistical challenges were great.
Well, for me, it was actually my second trip to the Maldives. The first time I was told that my visa application had been denied after I had traveled 24 hours to get there. So that was lovely. as you can imagine, the government was willing, after the negative press they got after that, to facilitate Amal and myself getting our visas and our being able to see President Nasheed in Mafushi prison. You know, and they did so, you know, relatively speaking, in accordance with our requests. Of course, you know, we did have an experience there, which was pretty remarkable, which was demonstrable proof that our conversations with our client had been bugged, which was obviously quite disturbing. And we talked about that in the press conference that we held there as well. But we were able to see President Nasheed on three different occasions and to spend several hours with him and talk to him about what was going on and talk about the various aspects of the international legal case that we are working on. We expect forthcoming in the next week to 10 days, a decision from the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention, which is a specialist human rights body that's part of the UN that will, we expect, issue a decision that he's being held in violation of international law. And I think being in the Maldives also enabled us to talk to a lot of people on the ground and to hear firsthand from civil society and from a range of political actors. We had a chance to see the Attorney General of the Maldives and to speak to him, to understand kind of really what was going on and what the prospects were to get the government to change course. And unfortunately, it became quite clear very quickly that the government is committed to its ongoing persecution of President Nasheed. And so we will have, I think, a continuing long road ahead. But ultimately, my experience on these kinds of cases is that it becomes very, very difficult for governments to sustain the position of detaining political prisoners. And from there, I think that once we win the case at the United Nations, you know, we will build international momentum even beyond what we already have to ratchet up the pressure on the government and put into a position to make a decision that, you know, is it really worth it to the government to continue to detain him? Governments and dictators like President Yameen never release any of people like this because they want to. They only do so when they're forced to and when it's their least worst among a lot of bad alternatives. And so our job is to increase the cost to the government as high as possible so that they decide that the least worst alternative is letting him go.
Spending time there, Jared, recently, did President Yameen completely throw out the entire government when he took office? And as a subset of that, when you were visiting, did you sense any kind of sympathy towards the plight of President Nasheed from people who are working within the government now, maybe some underlings?
I mean, it's a very small place and everybody knows each other. You know, obviously all the people supporting President Nasheed were kicked out of office when he was pushed out in a coup. Unfortunately, his vice president was part of that whole plot, he learned later. So other than his vice president, you know, pretty much everybody was out. And what happened was that there was then a subsequent elections in 2013, which is when Yameen took over from the vice president. And, and the elections in the first round, Nasheed actually, you know, won substantially, but the Supreme Court annulled the results and then rescheduled the elections twice to maximize confusion and difficulty of people in voting. And that it's only then that, you know, Yameen was ultimately able to prevail in like a third round of voting after, you know, where one round was was reversed and the vote was postponed twice. So, I think that unfortunately, the Gayoom dictatorship really has returned to power, which is just a slightly different version of the old version where Mamoun Gayoom ruled for 30 years with an iron fist. And you do have some sympathy at certain levels within the government to President Nasheed. But I think that as more and more people on the government side and who are part of the government coalition are being imprisoned and locked up because Yameen is suspicious of them, I think the willingness of people to take any risk because of the fear that Yameen is imposing on people within the government has dramatically reduced. And I think there's not a lot of willingness on the part of people in senior levels of government to stand up to Yameen because they believe they'll otherwise go to prison or worse.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to international human rights attorney Jared Genzer. So tell us what it was like meeting with President Nasheed. What kind of treatment is he getting right now in prison in the Maldives?
So President Nasheed is a man of extraordinary resilience. I mean, he is an extraordinary figure who has a gentle and strong spirit about him. And he is an optimist, an eternal optimist, despite what he's been through and the fact that he went from prisoner of conscience to president and back again. And so, you know, he knows it's only a matter of time before he's going to be freed, and he is determined to persevere despite the challenges that he's facing. And I think, you know, meeting with him was really inspiring for me personally. Meeting my clients is always inspiring. It's really why I became a human rights lawyer, actually, is because to see, despite the challenges that they're facing, you know, his resilience is, under incredibly difficult circumstances is really extraordinary. But I would say that President Nasheed is in good spirits, but is in a very difficult situation. And while we are going to be able to increase the pressure on the government, at the end of the day, President Yameen has to decide that it's just not worth the ongoing grief and aggravation of the pressure that we're going to be putting on them in order to, maintain his current position. And so we obviously hope that he will change his mind, and we're going to do everything possible to help change his mind for him.
And why don't you speak towards the call that you and your colleagues have made for international sanctions against the Maldives government? How would that work?
So, I mean, we see, you know, just in the United States, individual and targeted sanctions imposed on a whole range of countries for, human rights abusers. Countries like Belarus and Venezuela and Iran, are places where there are major human rights abuses ongoing and where the U.S. government has imposed targeted sanctions on, judges, prosecutors, police who've committed acts of torture and these kinds of things. And so it's our view that, obviously we would not want to impose blanket sanctions on the Maldives because tourism is very critical to the economy and most people in the country are employed in the tourist sector. But we believe that by having targeted sanctions imposed against, the foreign minister who's defending these wrongful imprisonments, the attorney general, the prosecutor general, the judges in Nasheed's case and in other cases of political prisoners, right, that will send a very clear international signal of disapproval. And that what one can put in place is both travel bans to the United States and also targeted financial sanctions, such that if they have any international banking relationships and any of those relationships touch the United States, their accounts can be blocked or frozen, and we can impose a real cost on people in the Maldives that are complicit in or actively participating in repression of human rights.
And so the idea is that people who have enough means to be traveling outside of the Maldives are already, let's say, the equivalent of the 1% here in this country. And so targeted sanctions of this ilk would not hit the impoverished of the Maldives as much.
Precisely. I mean, the whole point is that we do not want to touch anybody other than people who are directly involved in, ordering, or complicit in major human rights abuses. We're not talking about anything that will affect the average Maldivian. We're talking about people that are in the elite in the government who are overseeing terrible human rights abuses, torture, wrongful imprisonment, murder, or anyone that we have specific evidence of cases in which they would have been involved in serious human rights abuses would be people that we would like to prospectively sanction.
I see.
And, you know, ultimately the U.S. government and other governments will have to decide what they want to do. But the point is that these are people by definition who are high up in the Maldivian government, who are directly involved in committing abuses and are the kind of people that have the means and the wherewithal to travel internationally. You know, when people get put on U.S. sanctions lists, they find it almost impossible to open up bank accounts really anywhere in the world, not just with U.S. banks, because the U.S. banking system is obviously highly regarded. And if the U.S. sanctions individual people, then that can cause serious problems and be very dislocating for people who are placed in these lists. So our goal is to inflict maximum pain on the people directly responsible for what is happening in terms of the repression of human rights, and to do absolutely nothing of any kind that would touch anybody who has nothing to do with the ongoing human rights abuses in the Maldives. And so it's very easy to be quite surgical in how these kinds of sanctions are imposed. And so contrary to the representations being made by the government's representative, Shuri Blair, we are not calling for sanctions on the country of any kind. In fact, we're only calling for sanctions against individual major human rights abusers.
Well, unlike you, who can meet with these leaders and are directly inspired by them, what can our listeners do who are also very frustrated and sympathetic to the plight of President Nasheed? How can they help?
I think there are kind of a range of ways they can help. I think it's important for people to talk about what's happening here. And if they care about the environment and they're writing about the environment or an op-ed or otherwise, telling the story of the Maldives, I think is a very, very important story. I think, you know, emailing the embassy of the Maldives in the United States and expressing frustration, telling people, you know, if they're going to look to go to the Maldives, for example, on a vacation, you know, for the time being, we're not talking about encouraging people not to travel there. But, you know, there's a website called Ethical Maldives that provides a list of the resorts that are environmentally sustainable and aligned, you know, with the opposition. The resort owners are aligned with the opposition rather than either being not sustainable or being aligned with the government. And the ones that are aligned with the government and the resort owners aligned with the government are actually not just merely sympathetic to what the government wants, but they actually are also funding the state-run media to vilify the opposition, President Nasheed, and otherwise. If one can look at who you should be supporting versus opposing, there are very clear good actors and bad actors in the Maldives in terms of travel and tourism. And so there's a lot that one can learn from what's happening there. And, you know, I think that to me, President Nasheed is really a human rights hero for the 21st century, and he needs all the help and support that he can get.
He's the founder of Freedom Now, also the managing director of Perseus Strategies, international human rights attorney, Jared Genzer. Jared, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks so much.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Charlie Hunter and Martin Sexton. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others.
and tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.